This episode is brought to you by 1010. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly and sustainably sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful diamond ring, launching exclusively on January 18th at BlueDial.com. This exciting limited edition collection of diamond engagement rings launches on January 18th, and you can preview it exclusively at BlueNile.com. What's better than this? Guys being dudes here on the Draft Dudes podcast, presented by Locked On. It's Joe Marino, Kyle Krabs, and Chris Schubert from the Draft Network, and we are your hosts here on this Monday episode of the show. Folks, I missed you on that live stream on Thursday, but it's good to be back, and good morning to you, Mr. Krabs.
Good morning. We got, three more football games this year?
Oh, dude. What a sobering way to put it.
It's not wrong.
You're not wrong.
There's a part of me that is oddly, I'm excited because of the way we structured our scouting process this year. I'm excited for the season to be over. Obviously, anybody who has a team that's amongst the final four would feel differently. Right? But I'm excited for the season to be over because I've been so engrossed in like Notre Dame, Big Ten, and some of these smaller schools that like, I want to start watching tape on some of these guys, but the way our calendar is lining up is we all have our regions we're responsible for through the end of the season. And then we'll start doing cross checks. And that's when I'll start to watch tape on some of the other consensus top guys. So I'm really excited.
Let me just say that I have loved scouting the AAC this year, man. What a fun conference. I mean, the ACC is really good this year, but like, I feel like there's so many underrated guys in that conference. And it's weird because there's not a lot of buzz on these players. So I can't wait for the cross-check season as well. So that way I can start to hear, you know, you and Dre and Jordan confirm or tell me I'm crazy on some of these guys. So we got some fun discussions coming up. And we will start shifting towards that draft discussion here on this podcast very, very soon. So rest assured that that's coming. Christopher, happy Monday to you.
Happy Victory Monday to you, Joe Marino, here. Let me just get that out of the way. Congratulations to you. You will be playing in one of those three final games of the season. Hopefully, it's not just one. It is two of the final three games of the season.
Do you really feel that way, Chris?
Your sister's a Bills fan,
so.
And you're my friend, man. I'm rooting for you to have success, all right?
That's very kind.
I hope you win a Super Bowl. I have no ill will towards the Bills. If it was the Patriots, different story. And plus, if you can beat Brady, come on, that'd be great.
So part of me would love the opportunity to play against Brady, but after that dude beat us like every single time for 20 years, like 33-3 or something all time against the Bills, I don't think I could stomach another loss to Brady, especially if it came into the Super Bowl. But yes, thank you, Chris. Very exciting times for the Bills Mafia. So today we're talking about exciting times for other teams who have secured a new head coach. We had, what is it, 7 openings this year? 7 openings. 5 of them have been filled. And so we haven't really had a chance to reflect on some of these decisions. And while every single hire deserves its chance to play out, right, whether you agree or disagree with the direction that the team went, you know, you got to see how it goes. But today we're going to kind of give some of those initial reactions to these new NFL head coaches. And so, Kyle, do you want to pick a team to start with?
Yeah, let's start with the Chargers, because this was the one that, you know, kind of came up out of left field in the last, 8 o'clock in the morning on Monday, the last 12 hours. Yep. This came out of nowhere. The Chargers kind of going against the grain with everything that we were expecting them to do. You know, we'd pegged them as offensive coach working for Justin Herbert. Now they go and hire Chargers defensive coordinator Brandon Staley after a very successful campaign for the Rams, and he is your new head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers gets to stay in Los Angeles.
So, Kyle, let me ask you this, and this is something that Jordan Reed brought up in one of our scouting staff meetings recently when we were talking about head coaches and, you know, who the candidates were. And he said something along the lines of, you know, I'd always hire an offensive head coach because I would want that consistency with my quarterback and, you know, play caller and scheme and all of that. And when you have a defensive-minded head coach and a good quarterback, inevitably that offensive coordinator just continues to get plucked and you know, has opportunities to become head coaches. You don't have that consistency. You and I are both fans of a team with a defensive-minded head coach. Chris Schubert, welcome to the club. How do you feel about that, Kyle? Do you feel like Brandon Staley is – we can get into him in a moment, but from that perspective of Justin Herbert, which we all can agree is the most important thing about the Chargers right now, do you get concerned about this when it comes to Herbert and not necessarily being able to consistently grow with that same offensive coordinator because he has a defensive-minded head coach?
You hear read what Peter Schrager had to say about this?
No, I didn't.
This was 10 hours ago. So right around 10 o'clock last night. Regarding concerns with Brandon Staley being a, quote, defensive coach and Justin Herbert being a young quarterback, Staley was a highly decorated high school quarterback in Ohio, played quarterback at Dayton, and has connected with quarterbacks at the community college D3, D1, and NFL level.
Does that make you feel better about that?
No, absolutely not.
Okay. I was wondering. Okay, so here's the thing. You and I do both agree that there is something really important about having that CEO-type head coach. And I don't know if Brandon Staley's going to be that or not. You would think – I think we naturally label defensive-minded coaches as more likely to be that because they're not going to be offensive play callers. But, man, what Staley was able to do this year with that Rams defense very quickly is very impressive to me. I know they have – Aaron Donald. I know they have Jalen Ramsey. Michael Brockers is definitely an above-average player, but, man, there's not a whole lot else in terms of marquee names and talent. He's gotten really good production out of, you know, guys like Jordan Fuller and Brandon Williams and Micah Kizer. Really pieced this together, and I was very impressed with the Rams' defense. And so when you just look at what he was responsible for and how it performed, I think you could be really impressed with that. Obviously, he's a young coach, and you know, maybe this is one of those situations where you hire a guy a year ahead of maybe when they probably should, just given his relative inexperience. But I think we can all say the Rams defense was impressive this year and didn't have a very deep roster of defensive talent.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that from a schematics standpoint, Brandon Staley has done wonderfully with the Los Angeles Rams defense. But Joe, Staley's first year coaching in the NFL was when, do you know?
Was Denver? Was it Denver last year?
No, he was in the league in 2017 was his first year in the league outside linebackers coach with the Chicago Bears. So he was with Fangio in Chicago at 17 and 18, went with Fangio to Denver in 2019, and then this past year was Rams defensive coordinator. So he has four seasons of experience coaching at any level of responsibility at the NFL level. Now, granted, you know, defensive coordinator at JMU, defensive coordinator at John Carroll, associate head coach at Hutchinson Community College in 2010. So I guess that's my level of apprehension, is he has not been around the NFL game very long, and we have a very small sample size. Now, granted, some of the better coaches in the league had small sample sizes when they got hired. So, you know, if this was the direction the Chargers felt they had to go, you have to get really excited about the talent that he gets to work with the Chargers defensively. Obviously, they have some personnel decisions to make from a financial standpoint, but, you know, Bosa being in the picture and Kenneth Murray being a first-round pick, and if Melvin Ingram comes back and if Derwin James can stay healthy, there's a lot to like here about this fit.
Oh, yeah. So we were pretty set on thinking this was going to be Brian Daboll. And, you know, I mean, right down to Telesco and Daboll going to the same high school and both being natives to the, you know, Western New York area. I thought it was a slam dunk, obviously, Justin Herbert, Josh Allen. You'd love to see Brian Daboll get his hands on Herbert and see what happens there. But that didn't happen. Yeah, they went with Brandon Staley. How much of this do you think is Brandon Staley just knocking the interview out of the park versus, you know, did they not want to wait another week to really move forward with Dable because he's still coaching his team. And, you know, you start to worry about other teams filling their vacancies and, you know, snatching up all the assistant coaches. I mean, do you think it's a little bit of both, or did they really just, you think Staley knocked it out of the park and they said, that's our guy?
I mean, maybe a little bit of both. I could tell you, I would be very uncomfortable if I were the Houston Texans or Philadelphia Eagles right now.
Oh, and I did, sure.
And if I did not have my vacancy filled. Now, Josh McDaniels interviewed last night. Todd Bowles interviewed today with Philadelphia. So there's still interviewees to go around, of course. But you think about the hires who have taken place, and, you know, if you're discluding Staley as a little bit of an off-the-board pick, and if you're discluding Dan Campbell in Detroit, which, you know, Robert Saleh was pegged for that job for forever because Congress, the state Congress, freaking wrote Ford's a letter, right, and made a letter of recommendation. So, but other than that, you know, the hire in New York, nevertheless, Jacksonville also went off board. The hire in Atlanta, those are some of the more marquee names. So you're really seeing the coaching candidate pool for the popular names this year. It's Bieniemy, and if you want to include Brian Daboll in that, and no, I don't know if I'm Brian Daboll or Eric Bieniemy, a highly regarded offensive mind. I don't know that I want to go to either one of these vacancies right now because I'm getting handcuffed with Carson Wentz with ownership flexing and management flexing that he's got to be the quarterback. And Houston has a destination in which you might not have your franchise quarterback because he doesn't want to be there.
When it comes to getting or staying in shape, nothing feels as good as the feeling of accomplishment, of hitting your fitness goals and feeling great about yourself. Echelon can get you there. Echelon offers the next generation of connected fitness bikes, fitness mirrors, rowing machines, and their all-new Stride Smart treadmill. No matter what your favorite fitness activity is, Echelon gives you a fun and challenging workout from the comfort of your home. Their world-class instructors will motivate you with thousands of daily live and on-demand studio-level classes always available when you need them. Unlike their competitors, Echelon is affordable for everyone, and one membership lets up to five family members all work out at the same time. Right now, you can try any Echelon fitness equipment at home for 30 days. Go to echelonfit.com/NFL. That's echelonfit.com/NFL.
I know we got a lot to get to with these other coaches, but I really want to ask you one more question about this Charger situation, because the Dolphins, when they hired Coach Flores, they waited, right? Patriots won the Super Bowl, and it felt like forever before that decision came through or it was made official. And then, you know, Brian Flores, his initial staff, a lot of that turned over year one to year two. I mean, I think, if I'm not mistaken, both coordinators and a ton of assistant coaches. Do you think not having his top choices contributed to that, or do you think it was just a matter of just learning the ebbs and flows and figuring out and massaging and getting the right people in place?
Well, I'm kind of fascinated on what this offensive staff looks like, you know,
for the Chargers.
The most well-regarded coordinator candidate on the market right now might be Anthony Lynn. And I could tell you, he ain't going to be coaching
right.
The Los Angeles Chargers.
Right. What about Jay Gruden?
You could, Pep Hamilton had interest in Miami. You know, he was the quarterback's coach there. You know, do you go the sake of continuity and try and promote him? Is Doug Peterson interested?
Doug Peterson screams take a year off guy to me.
Yeah, and I think that's his intention.
Yeah. All right. Should we do anything else on the Chargers here, or shall we move on?
No, I think you guys hit it all. It's going to be very interesting to see what this coaching staff looks like. That's going to really make me determine if this was a good hire or not, right? If they think Brendan Staley is a great leader of men and is a great CEO type, that's wonderful. They got to put the right staff around him to be able to maximize the talent, because there's talent on that team. So I think that's going to be the biggest question mark going forward.
I'd love to talk about Urban Meyer and the Jacksonville Jaguars. We did our coaching roundtable, I guess, a week or two ago. Really fun discussion with Paige and Jamie, and Jordan Reed was on there a bit, and obviously us. And I got pretty heated and spirited on my thoughts And I don't think I've changed my mind at all. I mean, this Jacksonville situation, two first round picks this year, including number one overall, the most cap space in the NFL, a ton of young, talented football players that are already in place. And you're going to hand this over to a guy who doesn't have 5 minutes of NFL experience. He's never developed a rookie quarterback. He's never developed talent in the NFL. He's never made personnel decisions. And you got the sense listening to that press conference that this is his football team, that Urban Meyer, I mean, they haven't even hired the GM. They said, we're getting Urban Meyer and then we'll go from there. It feels weird to me. And I just, it could work out really, really well. And my thoughts about this don't preclude this from being a successful hire. But I go into this with a whole lot of doubt and concern that Jacksonville went for a splashy name and really didn't think about what it was going to take to make NFL football work in Duval County.
And from what I understand, Urban Meyer is going to be responsible for personnel decisions. Like even beyond just the impression that you got off the press conference. So has this ever worked?
It's not working in Arizona, brother.
Genuine question. Has this ever worked?
So when it has, I think about Jimmy Johnson, but he inherited one of the greatest rosters in NFL history. Barry Switzer. I mean, again, the same thing. Like Nick Saban didn't work.
And to be fair to Jimmy, because Jimmy Johnson took over that team when they were bad, but they were sitting on a treasure trove and right. They tore that roster down. Because who'd they trade? Eric Dickerson? Was that the Eric Dickerson trade?
I don't want to say yes or no, but probably. Herschel Walker.
Yeah, Herschel Walker.
So no, I don't think there's a lot of case study that you can point to. Now, it doesn't stop us every year from being infatuated with the idea of Lincoln Riley or whoever, Matt Campbell or whatever hotshot college coach, leaping to the NFL ranks. But I think that's a good point, Kyle. Not only do I have concerns about it, but like there's just not a whole lot of case study that you can point to that said, yeah, this works.
Well, and you expand it to from a a hierarchy within the front office perspective and the coaches, you're gonna try to hire a GM who's gonna report to the owner but also simultaneously defer decision making powers to Urban Meyer. Who's gonna want to do that? Like what hire are you gonna make that somebody's gonna be chomping at the bit to say, I want to come work for a college coach with no experience, knowing I don't have final say on personnel, and I have to clear all the checks through the owner, which, I understand with how Jacksonville's been burned by bad contracts as of late. I understand why the owner feels that way. But it's like they both also report to the owner. It's not even as though the GM reports to Meyer or Meyer reports to the GM. They both report to the owner, so it's not a linear chain of command. And the GM doesn't have any final say on anything. So your selling points have gone from all of these assets, all of this cap space, all these draft picks, all this young talent, Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
And you just gave all of it to Urban Meyer and are now going to try to fill in the blank afterwards.
They need to get this right because, like, Tom Coughlin, great run, obviously, with the Jaguars as their head coach. But – I mean, then it was like a long stretch of Jack Del Rio where they were up and down. Mike Mularkey was a flop, 2-14 as a coach. Gus Bradley goes 14-48. Doug Marrone, 23-43. Like, you got to get this right. I mean, they're teetering on, what you and I went through for so long with just can't get it right. Now they've held on to these guys for a while, some of these. I mean, imagine. I mean, Doug Marrone coached 66 games there. Gus Bradley, 62 games, 14-48. Man, like, Jacksonville really needs to get this right.
I'm rooting for this science experiment to go well, but my expectation level is low.
I also feel some type of way about Urban Meyer because I've always kind of labeled myself as a closet Florida Gators fan, And the peak of my Gators fandom was obviously Urban Meyer's stretch there. And then when he just left, you know, like, and you felt like it was on the brink of something blowing up, and, you know, he leaves because he has medical concerns and he wants to spend more time with his daughters. And then it feels like he just finessed his way to Ohio State, and then things get dicey there and he resigns. I don't know, man. There's something about this guy that just rubs me the wrong way.
There's no ejection button here. Now, there's also no NCAA sanctions to worry about.
Right.
So, yeah, that's as off the board as you could possibly get, and against conventional wisdom in just about every way. How it works is yet to be determined. You know, I certainly don't want to sit here and say there's 0% chance that this works.
Right.
But there is a pretty significant level of skepticism around this hire because it is just so unconventional.
Kyle, I always felt like you've had a soft spot for Dan Campbell, you know? And so yeah. He gets this job as the Lions principal. Head coach. So break him down for us.
So, Chris, are you familiar with PC Principal?
This is a South Park reference, yes?
It is a South Park reference.
Yeah, I am familiar.
Now, Google Dan Campbell and tell me this man is not PC Principal in the flesh.
All right, so
Joe, you'd probably be better off Googling PC Principal.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I know what Dan Campbell
is. Kyle, this is a top five pull by you. This is incredible work here. This is very good.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. This is who he is. That's for sure.
It's Dan Campbell.
That's very good, Kyle.
That's Dan Nicely Campbell. Done. Now, Dan was, or is, I should say, at least he was when he was the interim head coach, when he took over for 12 games from Joe Philbin in 2014, about as blue collar as you could possibly get. His entire thing was compete. You know, they went back to like entering week five, they went into day one of training camp type hitting drills. And the team comes out and they were 1-3 at the time, and they scored like 40, 45 points in each of their next two football games and won them both. So what he was able to do to ignite a spark in a team that was effectively DOA, dead on arrival, I enjoyed. I thought he did well within the framework of that season to really coach as though he had nothing to lose and had some good aggressiveness to him. But as far as what the strengths and weaknesses are of this Detroit Lions football team, it's a little surprising because he was a team, or he did coach a team that was very dialed in on playing physical up front and running the football and being one of these blue collar teams. And he's kind of, you know, he played under like Bill Parcells. So you kind of get like that kind of vibe from him. So not necessarily the fit if you think about, okay, you know, Matt Stafford, but he was an interim head coach in 2014 or 2015, excuse me. And he's bided his time and he's got more experience. He worked under Sean Payton and excited to see what his starting point was in Miami and what he's pulled from his time in New Orleans and how that's made him a different head coach, maybe a little bit more better suited for today's game, and seeing what that end result looks like.
I think Dan Campbell from day one becomes a top five in terms of best odds for the NFL head coach Royal Rumble, right?
Like he's number one. He's number one. So?
And yes. That's you've been hard on Flores as being number one. I mean, Vrabel's obviously a common take there, but he changes that landscape for sure. This is one that I don't think many people expected, but I sort of like it. Obviously the toughness and stuff that you talked about there, but like the fact that this is a I don't know, it's hard to say, like it's a roster of players that don't fit a lot of schemes. And, you know, I think he can come in and just like preach that toughness and find a way and try to piece this together and just jumpstart this thing and create a culture of competing and kind of just figure it out from there. I don't think we should expect the Lions to be a playoff contender next year, but This is the type of move that screams like, hey, we got to build a foundation here and get this thing right for the long term. And I think a hire like this sends that message to me, at least.
I don't know how high my expectations are for longevity with this hire, unfortunately. From what I understand, you know, Detroit seems pretty reserved on having Stafford around for another year. So this may have been a case of any coach with who was a high profile coach that wanted to come in here may have wanted an opportunity to hit refresh and kind of start anew. And those in place kind of were insistent that this needs to be the way that it is. And Matt Stafford's going to be here. And maybe that opened the door for why this was such an off the board pick that materialized very quickly. But Dan's ready, because Dan spent the last 5 years as the assistant head coach in New Orleans. And I think this is an opportunity for him, as you said, to kind of come into a roster that is kind of a phrase that I had coined for the 2019 Miami Dolphins, an island of misfit toys.
Yeah, it's a good way right? to put it.
So, you know, you're going to have to galvanize these guys and bring them all together and energize them and get them playing for each other. And Campbell is exactly the kind of guy that can do that. I just don't know what the long-term ceiling is because of the stat, not necessarily because of Dan, but because of the status of Detroit and the law of averages say, if you're going to have seven new hires, two are going to hit.
Yeah. So I Shuby, as we transition now to the Jets and Robert Saleh, I think it was commonly believed that Saleh was going to go to Detroit. So as we transition from Detroit to the Jets, and the Jets are the team that gets Saleh, like, what are your thoughts on why he wasn't the guy in Detroit and your initial thoughts on him being the Jets head coach?
Well, my initial thoughts are,
he takes me to weird places.
I mean, he just does. Like, Robert Saleh, I mean, this is, I am ecstatic that he's been hired. I mean, to that point, I mean, I think Kyle mentioned a little earlier in the show, but this was a big talking point all throughout the offseason, was like, there were members of the Minnesota state government that wrote a letter to ownership that said, we want Robert Saleh to represent the Detroit Lions. He's from here. We want him to be our guy. Listen, I think this just goes to show how much he impressed in the interview process. He was on the list of candidates for the Jets, and it was a lengthy list, but every media report out of New York said he was not at the top of that list. He was not number one, yet he worked his way there. So I think this goes to show just how much he impressed during that interview process. And remember, he went to Detroit right after the second interview with the Jets, if I remember correctly. So it wasn't like the Jets kind of interviewed and brought him in for a second interview and then they kept him from going someplace else. Yeah. He
wasn't
went,
the Matt Rhule thing, right?
Yeah, right. He went other places and ultimately he chose to go to the New York Jets. So I think that says more about what the Jets job looked like and meant to Saleh compared to the Lions job than it was maybe Saleh not being that great of a candidate.
What are your thoughts about either continuing with Sam Darnold or getting a new quarterback with the number two pick? Your thoughts on,
you know,
the defensive-minded head coach? Yeah, well, I mean, do you worry about that as far as the potential revolving door at offensive coordinator?
So, listen, somebody asked me this on Twitter over the weekend, and I rank the options like this. Here are the three options I would like to start in 2021 at quarterback for the New York Jets: Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Sam Darnold. And I have been incredibly consistent in that this is nothing personal against Sam Darnold. I still think Sam Darnold can be a very good starting quarterback in the National Football League, but sometimes everybody needs a change of scenery. And I think it's unfair to Joe Douglas, who didn't draft Sam Darnold in the first place, and it's unfair to Robert Saleh in his first year as a head coach to strap him with a quarterback that he didn't have a say in picking. So I think it's just best for everybody to move on. Now, there's Deshaun Watson rumors that are making me, you know, I played the Takes Me to Weird Places. That's what those rumors are doing to me. But I think I really like the hire at offensive coordinator if it does end up being Mike LaFleur. I don't think that's actually official yet at this point, but it appears as who it's going to be. And I think that gives a great system, and it gives Joe Douglas an idea of, hey, this is what we want to do. This is what we want to run to give this team, because they certainly need a ton of offensive talent, to give them players to fit this system. So, no, I'm not concerned about going defensive-minded. I think Saleh is going to be a guy, CEO type, that people are going to want to play for. You hear all the former players talking about it. It could be a mess, right? I'm not saying home run, oh, God, get him to Canton. But the process here was good, and that's all I can ask for as a Jets fan.
So I guess the AFC East has the bald head coaches, right? Saleh, McDermott, Flores, right? Belichick. Maybe if he coaches long enough, he can join the club. I think it's a good hire, man. I've always been impressed with what he's been able to do with San Francisco. I think the way that he won over a guy like Richard Sherman so quickly, an established veteran in the NFL, really speaks to his leadership. The fact that that unit, despite not having Bosa this year, having injuries with their safeties, obviously DeForest Buckner was shipped off, dealing with rookie and Javon Kinlaw playing a ton for them. Like, that unit was really, really impressive. And, you know, I think when you think about what he was able to do there, get that production, and, you know, if he is able to bring over LaFleur as the OC, I think it's a nice little combination there to get things going with the New York Jets.
Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. So whether you're looking for a healthy snack, a breakfast on the go, something post-workout, or just like delicious things, Built Bar can fill the void for you. And best of all, Built Bar doesn't just taste good, it blows the nutritional facts of your typical protein bar out of the water. It's got 200 calories per bar or less, up to 20 grams of protein per bar, 18 delicious flavors to choose from, and 1/7 the grams of carbs and sugar of your typical protein bar. So if you're looking for a change up in your diet, visit BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, and you can save 20% off your next order of Built Bar. That's BuiltBar.com, promo code LOCKEDON to save 20%, and find out what all the fuss is about for yourself.
Are we ready for some football? The NFL playoffs are in full swing, and it's conference championship weekend. And there's only one place that has you covered and one place that we trust, and that's betonline.ag. Sign up for a free account today at betonline.ag and use our promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus. If you like a particular team's chances this weekend, or you want to take advantage of some prop bets, check out betonline.ag because they have the best lines in the business. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. And don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Kyle, any thoughts on Mr. Saleh?
No. Thought Chris did a nice job setting the table. Thought you cleared it up nice. So that leaves just one hire that's been filled to discuss, Mr. Arthur Smith in Atlanta. And, Joe, I guess my first question for you is, which one of these 2021 NFL draft quarterbacks do you like for Arthur Smith's offense?
It's a good question. Well, they're picking fourth, so they're not going to have their choice. But, I mean, if you think play action heavy offense, you know, throw the ball down the field, I mean, they sort of all work. I mean, realistically, they're probably going to have the choice of Trey Lance or nothing, right? Now, I don't think they're going to pick Mac Jones at number four. But I am intrigued by the idea of Trey Lance being shelved for a few years behind Matt Ryan or whatever they choose to do there before he's ready to play. And, you know, using that physical skill set in ways similar that he did with Ryan Tannehill. This job, more than any other, and we see this a lot with head coaching decisions in the NFL, is we want the opposite of what we had, right? We had a defensive-minded head coach, and we couldn't ever get the run game figured out on offense, and it really kind of, I think, strapped their consistency and especially their ability to win and close out games. Well, let's go get the guy that somehow in the year 2020 produced a 2,000-yard rusher. And obviously all the success that Tennessee typically has rushing the football. So I feel like this was very much like, obviously I'm not getting into the leadership or Arthur Smith as a person, but hey, what he's accomplished in football is not what we've accomplished. And we want that to kind of change and shift from some of our struggles that we couldn't get right in the past.
So I really like Justin Fields for this offense, if he's there. You know, you would invoke the name Ryan Tannehill, and you think about what some of his criticisms were at Miami, and it was pocket feel and getting stuck on the read. And I think Justin Fields, both of those are very pertinent with his NFL draft evaluation. And I do think there is momentum for him to be QB3, as crazy as that is to me. It really comes down to what happens in Miami, and if Miami stays at 3, do they trade out? If they trade out, are they trading with a team that's quarterback hungry? Are they trading with Cincinnati, who's trying to get up and secure Penei Sewell? Do the Dolphins just make a pick? Do they trade it to Houston as part of the package for Tua and Deshaun Watson? And if that's the case, then they're not going to be picking it. You know, so a lot of unknown as far as Atlanta's kind of in a very gray area right now for who's going to be available. But if Justin Fields were there, I would love that fit and do the same thing that you had mentioned with Trey Lance to redshirt him and not have pressure to play him there. And, you know, Fields is from the Atlanta area, so that's another connection between the two that's exciting and makes sense. And you know, obviously he was initially playing at University of Georgia. So I think there's a lot of likable connections for Justin Fields. And we've already kind of communicated some of our apprehension with Arthur Smith really just boils down to how easily replicatable is what you're doing in Tennessee when you're somewhere else. Because you do have one of those unicorn running backs, and you do have a really good offensive line. You have the ability with the receivers that you have to play really physical and play physical on the boundary. And you think about who they have there, and Julio Jones may not be there long-term, and Calvin Ridley's not that type of player. So I just think there's some schematic things that they'll have to iron out, but I'm really interested to see how it works.
You know, you hear every coach say, well, we got to build our scheme around the players that we have. It's funny because they don't have the players, like you said there. I mean, Julio's going to be prime for anybody. But, you know, looking at the rest of that thing, I mean, I don't see a Derrick Henry. I don't see – I don't have an A.J. Brown here to go with my Corey Davis, Jonnu Smith. I don't have mauling run blockers, you know.
I was going to say, Taylor Lewan's a very different type of offensive tackle than Jake Matthews, too.
The whole thing, man. So – we'll see, you know, if he really does have that ability to adapt. And that's one thing Charles Robinson said, is that people were impressed with the scheme versatility that exists with Arthur Smith. And that wasn't a comment that I understood at the time, but, you know, it'll be put to the test here, especially if he's in, you know, they're going to roll with Matt Ryan and kind of have a similar makeup in terms of personnel here in Atlanta. How are you feeling, Chuby, about this one?
Well, you guys know how I felt about Arthur Smith when the whole process started. I had him as one of my top three candidates for the New York Jets because I just thought what he was able to do in Tennessee was so impressive that he would be able to come into a system, into a situation where it kind of needed to be completely overhauled, and he would be able to put to set this team on the right course. I just think, and this is nothing against Arthur Smith, this is a really tough spot for him, right? Of all of the jobs to land, there's going to be a lot of things out of his control, right? The general manager here in Atlanta is going to have to do a lot of legwork to fix this roster with the terrible cap situation that they're in. And since we don't know what the cap number is going to be for next year yet, we don't know if that means like Matt Ryan has to be moved because they just need to be able to field a team next year. We talked about this in the roundtable that we did, that if this number comes in as low as people think, it's going to put them in a really tough spot. So Arthur Smith has his work cut out for him, but it certainly feels that if they can get a young quarterback in here that he's able to mold and he's able to put a system in place for, that they are, you know, trending in the right direction. So I like it. It maybe wouldn't have been the fit I would have picked for Arthur Smith, but I do like it.
And then we just have to wait on the Eagles and Texans, which, given some of the dynamics of the higher ups there, you know, could take some time here. And we've already kind of talked about it a little bit. Like, they're going to be the last two teams to fill. They're going to get the remaining coaches and assistant coaches that they can fill. But, you know, I'll be anxious to see who actually becomes the next head coach of those two teams.
Did we see that Houston is tail between their legs with the league trying to get an interview with Eric Bieniemy before, after they lose their next game?
So they had a scheduling, like they had to schedule it sooner, right?
That's yeah, there was the a window in the wild card window, and they didn't request it in time, and they missed that. And then the new league policy says, okay, you cannot interview until after they lose their next game. So Houston is now requesting with the league. This comes from Jacina Anderson. I'm told inquiries were made this past week to ascertain if the Texans could still interview Eric Bieniemy before Kansas City playoff run ends, despite NFL policy language. Quote, that's something that has to go through the owners, the two owners, to grant permission, because the NFL is not going to change the policy. So y'all drug your feet, took your time with it. Deshaun said what he said. And I just think it's very convenient that now all of a sudden there's a full court press to try and interview Eric Bieniemy. But just to make sure we finish on Deshaun Watson, because it is just an insane story. Schefter's report yesterday said Cal McNair would not solve the problem by firing Jack Easterby. Cal McNair would have to fire Cal McNair.
Ooh. So Deshaun's getting traded, man.
He's fed up. Yeah.
And I think my thought is whatever it takes. If I was a team that didn't have my quarterback or had doubt or whatever, just whatever it takes. You could still
have a quarterback, but if you don't have Deshaun Watson,
right,
you should be interested in acquiring Deshaun Watson.
There's like five teams that should not be in right. on this.
Yeah, direct quote from Schefter's report last night. Source close to Watson told ESPN's Chris Mortensen that firing Easterby would not resolve the issue, saying that, quote, Cal McNair would have to fire Cal McNair.
Oh, boy. Well, that's probably not going to happen. So,
hey, Kyle.
Yes.
It feels like our friendship's going to be tested here over the next couple of weeks.
I, Chris, I love you, but Deshaun Watson with a no trade clause is not accepting a trade to the New York Jets.
No. I know that, and I don't expect him to. But based on the fact that there are two teams are the two teams that get mentioned more than anything, our friendship might be tested.
But well, I don't think so.
How do you pivot, Chris? You've been anti-paid Deshaun. Your team's on the doorsteps of potentially trading for him. You can't want that.
Joe, did you not hear me? Who said I don't think they're going to do it?
I understand, but I mean. You have
so
to
why do we have to be tested?
Well, because if my team if it gets serious, I'm going to have a take here on the show. And if it's coming to the Jets, it's hurting you. Like, just because I would say that I maybe don't trade your entire future for a quarterback who's not necessarily going to fix all of your problems. If he still becomes a Jet and he's not a Dolphin, you're going to be upset. And it's going to be because my team did something.
We have developing breaking news on the timeline.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Jim Nagy, our dear friend, director of the Senior Bowl, on January 11th, quote tweeted a tweet from Field Yates saying, can Devonta Smith just stay in Miami after the game to get work with the Dolphins? And Jim, on January 11th, night of the national championship game, said, no, but he can make a trip to Mobile and spend a week with Brian Flores and the Dolphins staff at the Reese's Senior Bowl. He just quote tweeted that tweet this morning, 8 minutes ago, with an explosion emoji.
That's the Tiger Tracker boom emoji that you see all the time.
Yes. So from all indications, Jim is teasing that Devonta Smith will be at the Senior Bowl this year.
Did you see his tweet from 11 minutes ago, Kyle?
No.
If you go look at his tweet from 11 minutes ago, I think it's even more inclination that Devonta Smith is going to be at the Senior Bowl.
Mood at the Senior Bowl HQ this morning. GIF of Devonta and Mechie. Secret handshake with a big old guitar strum in there. So,
when does Devonta ever back down from competing, you know?
It's a great question.
It's not now, in his DNA.
This is quite convenient because the Dolphins wide receiver – group at the Senior Bowl. I don't know if you guys have seen this. The Senior Bowl is releasing a position group a day for who gets to coach who. And they did wide receivers yesterday, and the Dolphins group stunk. So if Devonta's coming, I guarantee you know what team he's going to be put on for the Senior Bowl next week.
Oh, there it is. It's official. Reese's Senior Bowl. Devonta Smith has accepted his invitation to 2021 Reese's team.
I'll smash a retweet on that.
All right. Well,
what a great way to end the show.
Just developing story right here. Just working through it.
Yeah, there you go. So, you never know what you're going to get on the Draft Dudes podcast. Come for the head coaching hire, stay for the Senior Bowl breaking news reactions. Make sure you hit subscribe on the pod. We have a live stream tonight, 7:30 Eastern Standard Time. So plan your evenings accordingly. Kyle Krabs, Chris Schubert, Joe Marino, thanks as always for listening. And we'll talk with you guys a little later tonight.